Welcome to today's reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette and the Fort Dodge Messenger. Today is April 26th, Friday. My name is Stuart Brahms. Here's our first story from the Mason City Globe Gazette. Supreme Court election interference charges. Justice seems skeptical on Trump immunity claim. Former president may still get delay if case sent back to the lower courts. Mark Sherman, Associated Press, Washington. The Supreme Court appeared likely Thursday to reject former President Donald Trump's claim of absolute immunity from prosecution over election interference, but several justices signaled reservations about the charges that could cause a lengthy delay, possibly beyond November's election. A majority of the justices did not appear to embrace the claim of absolute immunity that would stop Special Counsel Jack Smith's prosecution of Trump on charges he conspired to overturn his 2020 election loss to Democrat Joe Biden. But in arguments lasting more than 2.5 hours in the court, first consideration of criminal charges against a former president, several conservative justices indicated they could limit when former presidents might be prosecuted, suggesting that the case may have to be sent back to lower courts before a trial could begin. The timing of the Supreme Court decision could be as important as the outcome. Trump, the presumptive 2024 Republican presidential nominee, pushed to delay the trial until after the election, and later the justices issue their decision, the more likely he is to succeed. If Trump regains the presidency, he would order the Justice Department to dismiss the case, or possibly, as two justices suggested, pardon himself if convicted. Since conservatives on the court gained a supermajority with the confirmation of three Trump appointees, they cast aside decades-long precedent on abortion and affirmative action. Now Trump is asking them to rule that one of the fundamental tenets of the American system of government, that no person is above the law, should be rejected as well, at least as it applies to him. The act of questioning from all nine justices left a strong impression that the court was not headed for that sort of speedy consensus decision that would allow a trial to begin quickly. Justices Neil Gorsuch and Brett Kavanaugh, two of Trump's three high court appointees, and Justice Samuel Alito said their concern was not the case against Trump, but rather the effect of their ruling on future presidencies. Each time Justice Department lawyer Michael Dribben sought to focus on Trump's actions, these justices jumped in. Quote, "This case has huge implications for the presidency, for the future of the presidency, and the future of the presidency, and the future of the country," Kavanaugh said. "The court is writing a decision for the ages," Gorsuch said. Justice Amy Coney Barrett, the other Trump appointee, seemed less open to arguments, advanced by Trump lawyer D. John Sauer, searching for a way a trial could take place. Smith's team wants a speedy resolution. The court typically issues its last opinions by the end of June, about 4 months before the election. U.S. District Court Judge Tanya Chutkan would preside over the trial, said pretrial issues could take up to 3 months. The court has moved quickly in prior cases involving presidential power, deciding the Watergate tape cases against President Richard Nixon just 16 days after arguments. This year, it took the justices less than a month to rule unanimously that states couldn't kick Trump off the ballot. Trump, the first former president charged with crimes, has said he wanted to be at the Supreme Court on Thursday. Instead, he was in a courtroom in New York where he stands trial on charges that he falsified business records to keep damaging information from voters when he directed hush money payments to a former porn star to keep quiet her claims that they had a sexual encounter. Sauer argued that former presidents are entitled to absolute immunity for their official acts. Otherwise, he said, politically motivated prosecutions of former occupants of the Oval Office would become routine and presidents couldn't function as the commander-in-chief if they had to worry about criminal charges. Lower courts rejected those arguments, including a unanimous three-judge panel on an appeals court in Washington, D.C. Several justices drilled down on trying to come up with a definition of what constituted an official act and whether charges based on one should be thrown out. Justice Elena Kagan at one point wondered whether a former president would escape prosecution even if he ordered a coup or sold nuclear secrets, Sauer said. Prosecutions might not be allowed if those were determined to be official acts. "That sure sounds bad, doesn't it?" Kagan asked. Chief Justice John Roberts conjured up a president being indicted for receiving a bribe in exchange for an ambassadorial appointment. How could the indictment go forward if prosecutors had to remove the official act, the appointment? The election interference conspiracy case brought Smith and Washington is just brought by Smith and Washington is just one of the four criminal cases confronting Trump. Smith's team says the men who wrote the Constitution never intended for presidents to be above the law, and that in any event, the acts Trump is charged with, including participating in a scheme to enlist fake electors in battleground states won by Biden, aren't in any way part of presidential official duties. Almost 4 years ago, all nine justices rejected Trump's claim of absolute immunity from a district attorney subpoena for financial records. That case played out during Trump's presidency, involved a criminal investigation, but no charges. Hamas official offers unlikely truce deal in war with Israel. El Hayer group would lay down arms of independent Palestinian state established. Abby Sewell, Associated Press, Istanbul. A top Hamas political official told the Associated Press the Islamic militant group is willing to agree to a truce of 5 years or more with Israel and that it would lay down its weapons and convert into a political party if an independent Palestinian state is established along pre-1967 borders. The comments by Khalil al-Hayya in an interview Wednesday came amid a stalemate in months of talks for a ceasefire in Gaza. The suggestion that Hamas would disarm appeared to be a significant concession by the militant group officially committed to Israel's destruction. But it is unlikely that Israel would consider such a scenario. It has vowed to crush Hamas following the deadly October 7, 2023 attacks that triggered the war, and its current leadership is adamantly opposed to the creation of a Palestinian state on lands that Israel captured during the 1967 Mideast War. Al-Hayya, a high-ranking Hamas official, who has represented the Palestinian militants in negotiations for ceasefire and hostage exchange, struck a sometimes defiant and other times conciliatory tone. Speaking to the AP in Istanbul, El-Hayya said Hamas wants to join the Palestinian Liberation Organization, headed by the rival Fatah faction, to form a unified government for Gaza and the West Bank. He said Hamas would accept a fully sovereign Palestinian state in the West Bank and Gaza Strip, and the return of Palestinian refugees in accordance with the international resolutions along Israel's pre-1967 borders. If that happens, he said, the group's military wing would dissolve. All the experiences of the people who fought against occupiers when they became independent and obtained their rights and their state would have these forces done. What have these forces done? They have turned the political parties and their defending fighting forces have turned into the national army, he said. Over the years, Hamas has sometimes moderated its public position with respect to the possibility of a Palestinian state alongside Israel. But its political program still officially rejects any alternative to the full liberation of Palestine from the river to the sea, referring to the area reaching from the Jordan River to the Mediterranean Sea, which includes lands that make up Israel. El-Hayya did not say whether his apparent embrace of a two-state solution would amount to an end to the Palestinian conflict with Israel, or an interim step towards the group's stated goal of destroying Israel. Ophir Falk, a foreign policy advisor to Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, declined to comment in Ohio's comments, dismissing him as a high-ranking terrorist. But he said Hamas has broken a previous truce with its October 7th attack on southern Israel, in which militants killed about 1,200 people, mostly civilians. Militants dragged some 250 hostages onto the enclave. Israel's ensuing bombardment and ground offensive have killed more than 34,000 Palestinians, most of them women and children, according to local health authorities, and displaced some 80% of Gaza's population of 2.3 million. Prime Minister Netanyahu's government set a mission to destroy Hamas, military and governing capabilities in Gaza, free the hostages, ensure that Gaza does not pose a threat to Israel and the rest of the civilized world in the future, he said. These goals will be achieved. There was no immediate reaction from the PLO or Fatah-led Palestinian Authority, the internationally recognized self-ruled government that Hamas drove out when it seized Gaza in 2007, a year after winning Palestinian parliamentary elections. After the Hamas takeover, the Palestinian Authority was left with administrating semi-autonomous pockets of Israeli-occupied West Bank. The Palestinian Authority hopes to establish an independent state in the West Bank, East Jerusalem, and Gaza, areas captured by Israel in the 1967 Mideast War, while the international community overwhelmingly supports such a two-state solution. Netanyahu's government rejects it. Nearly 7 months into the war in Gaza, ceasefire negotiations have stalled. Israel is now preparing for an offensive in the southern city of Rafah, where more than 1 million Palestinians have fled to. Israel says that it has dismantled most of the initial 24 Hamas battalions since the start of the war, but that was four remaining ones are holed up in Rafah. Israel agrees that Rafah offensive is necessary to achieve victory over Hamas. Philanthropy boosts Maui wildfire recovery. Winfrey Johnson set up a people's fund that raised almost $60 million. Thalia Biadi, Associated Press. Lena Vieira misses the swing set in her Halahina home, which was reduced to ashes in the wildfires that swept through her community last summer. Multiple generations went through there playing in my front yard, she said, just with the animals and the turtles and the deer and the goats that we once had in our little tiny yard. A grandmother of four and a mother of five, Vieira had lived in a home on a corner lot since 1991. She and 10 family members, including a baby younger than one, were displaced in the deadliest U.S. wildfire in more than a century. In the weeks that followed, she and her adult children applied for and received many kinds of assistance, including from the People's Fund of Maui, an initiative set up by Oprah Winfrey and Dwayne Johnson. All of them except one adult son have since received 6 months' payments of $1,200 directly into their bank accounts from the People's Fund. Vieira credits the payments with helping them stay current on their mortgage, which they have had to pay even though the house has been destroyed. When she learned she would receive direct payments, she said, "That was in the back of my head that if I had to use it, I'd have it, and it would probably save my house." When Winfrey and Johnson launched the People's Fund for Maui, which benefited people who lost their homes in the wildfires, they committed $10 million and asked others to join them. At that time, the request was met with some criticism, given especially Winfrey's wealth and extensive estate in Maui. In the end, the Entertainment Industry Foundation, a longtime nonprofit that helps celebrities administer charitable work and that managed the distribution of the funds, said it raised almost $60 million. That money was dispersed between September and February to some 8,100 adults and a significant portion of the 12,000 people that the state of Hawaii estimates were displaced. The foundation wouldn't say exactly how much Winfrey and Johnson gave in total, but a list of other contributors indicates the bulk came from them. EIF said more than 20,000 individuals and companies have donated to the fund. In September, Winfrey posted a video on social media thanking her supporters. Your generosity, I guarantee you, is going to touch the lives of many families. Over many years, the disaster response community has grown to trust direct cash transfers like these as a usual tool, said Shannon Ducey, a professor of the Bloomberg School of Public Health at Johns Hopkins University. Despite initial fears of misuse, she said, research has shown cash transfers overwhelmingly benefit the intended recipients who spend it on essentials like housing and food. Generally, there's the idea that cash provides dignity and choice, that it's more cost-effective use of assistance, said Ducey. Because not every household has the exact same needs, and households know their needs better than outside organizations. Many nonprofits and government programs now use direct cash transfers, including others in Maui following disasters. Vieira's family has tried to save all the money they've received, including a GoFundMe that the family members set up. Direct gift strangers sent to her daughter Venmo account and gift from a fundraiser Fox host Will Kane started. They will need that money and a lot more to rebuild, though those plans are still very distant. She said they are extremely grateful to everyone who donated and for the mutual aid efforts that were set up immediately after the fires. Those local efforts were how most people received assistance in the first weeks after the fire, said Maui-based attorney Lance Collins, who was representing some survivors. People felt that in general, there was a tremendous outpouring of generosity by individuals and community groups, and I think that Oprah and The Rock fell into that category, he said. Most of Vieira's family has been staying in hotels, an initial boon to the disaster response in a community where demand for housing was already extremely high, before 12,000 people lost their homes in the fire. However, uncertainty and the issues with mental health have been growing among those staying in hotels, according to nonprofits working with them, said Laura Nami, Senior Vice President of the Maui Recovery Fund. In January, state and county governments, along with Foundation and Federal Emergency Management Agency, announced a $500 million commitment to build 3,000 housing units that would offer displaced people shelter for at least 18 months. The foundation committed $50 million to the effort. Its single largest grant is from Maui Strong Fund, which is opened immediately after the wildfires. In total, the fund raised $189 million for more than 250,000 people all over the world. The foundation followed the disaster response plan it created in 2019. In anticipation of a possible catastrophic event, it has now paid out $89 million in grants, for purposely directing the majority of its support towards recovery and stabilization efforts, which will extend over months and years. That is the work that direct cash transfers won't address, including providing services, strengthening social support systems, and rebuilding with the next potential disaster in mind. Kamenana Brunel, who leads fundraising at Seabury Hall, a private school in Maui, was invited to offer some thoughts about the design of the People's Fund of Maui. She said she suggested that the fund make every adult who was displaced eligible for a direct cash transfer instead of just every household. Brummel said what she saw of Winfrey and Johnson's approach made her feel that they were approaching this gift with the superior spirit of a Hawaiian word, kahio, and it means to give lavishly, with no expectation of getting anything in return. Harvey Weinstein, court tosses conviction. Convicted rapists will remain in prison for Los Angeles sentence. Michael Sisak and Dave Collins, Associated Press, New York. New York's highest court on Thursday threw out Harvey Weinstein's 2020 rape conviction with a ruling that shocked and disappointed women who celebrated historic gains during the Me Too era. The court found the trial judge unfairly allowed testimony against ex-movie mogul based on allegations that weren't part of the case. Weinstein, 72, will remain in prison because he was convicted in Los Angeles in 2022 of another rape. But the New York ruling reopens a painful chapter in America's reckoning with sexual misconduct by powerful figures, an era that began in 2017 with a flood of allegations against Weinstein. While Thursday's ruling was a blow to the Me Too advocates, they noted it was based on legal technicalities and not an exoneration of Weinstein's behavior, saying the original trial irrevocably move the cultural needle on attitudes about sexual assault. The Manhattan District Attorney's Office said it intends to retry Weinstein, and at least one of his accusers said she would testify again. The State Court of Appeals overturned Weinstein's 23-year sentence in a 4-3 decision, saying the trial court erroneously admitted testimony of uncharged, alleged prior sexual acts. In a dissent, Judge Madeline Singus wrote that the Court of Appeals was continuing a disturbing trend of overturning juries' guilty verdicts in cases involving sexual violence, she said. The ruling came at the expense and the safety of women. The reversal of Weinstein's conviction is the second major Me Too setback in the last 2 years. The U.S. Supreme Court refused to hear an appeal of a Pennsylvania court decision to throw out Bill Cosby's sexual assault conviction. Weinstein has been in New York prison since his conviction for forcibly performing oral sex on TV and film production assistant in 2006, and rape in the third degree for an attack on an aspiring actress in 2013. He was sentenced to 16 years in prison in the Los Angeles case. Weinstein's lawyers expect Thursday court ruling to have a major impact on the appeal of his Los Angeles rape conviction. Their arguments are due on May 20th, 2024. Weinstein's conviction in 2020 was heralded by activists and advocates as a milestone achievement, but dissected just as quickly by his lawyers and later the Court of Appeals when it heard arguments on the matter in February. Dozens of women came forward to accuse Weinstein, including famous actresses such as Ashley Judd and Uma Thurman. Surge in imports drives economic growth down. High costs pressure consumers who still continued spending. Associated Press, Washington. The nation's economy slowed sharply last quarter to a 1.6 annual pace in the face of high interest rates, but consumers, the main driver of economic growth, kept spending at a solid pace. Thursday's report from the Commerce Department said that the gross domestic product, the economy's total output of goods and services decelerated in January to March quarter from its brisk 3.4% rate to the final three months of 2023. A surge in imports, which are subtracted from the GDP, reduced first quarter growth by nearly 1%. Growth was also held back by businesses reducing their inventories. Both those categories tend to fluctuate sharply from quarter to quarter. The economy, though, is still creating price pressures, a continuing source of concern for the Federal Reserve. A measure of inflation accelerated to a 3.4 annual rate from January through March, up from 1.8 in the last 3 months of 2023, and the biggest increase in the year. Excluding volatile food and energy prices, so-called core inflation rose at a 3.7% rate, up from 2% in the fourth quarter of 2023. Baltimore. The first cargo ship passed through a newly opened deep water channel Thursday in Baltimore after being struck in the harbor since the Francis Scott Key Bridge collapsed 4 weeks ago. Space race. China launched a three-member crew to its orbiting space station Thursday, part of its ambitious program that aims to put astronauts on the moon by 2030. Some schools call police to stop demonstrations. University of Southern California cancels big graduation ceremony. Associated Press. The University of Southern California canceled its main graduation ceremony, and dozens more college students were arrested at other campuses nationwide Thursday as protests against the Israel-Hamas war spread. College officials across the United States are worried protests could disrupt plans for commencement ceremonies. Some universities called in police to break up demonstrations, resulting in scuffles and hundreds of arrests, while others appeared content to wait out protesters as the semester ticks down. Some schools, such as Columbia University in New York and California State Polytechnic University, Humboldt, tried to negotiate a solution with protesters. Other universities are rewriting their rules to ban encampments and moving final exams to new locations. Encampments and protests continue to spring up Thursday. Students protesting the war demand schools cut financial ties to Israel and divest from companies enabling the conflict. Some Jewish students say the protests veered into anti-Semitism and made them afraid to set foot on campus. You are listening to the Mason City Globe Gazette and Fort Dodge Messenger on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. All material heard on IRIS is intended solely for the use of the blind and print disabled. My name is Stuart Brahms. If you have any comments on this or any other IRIS program, give us a call at 515-243-6833. And now we'll turn to the Fort Dodge Messenger. $450,000 settlement and Stringer Civil Rights Saga by Jane Curtis. A $450,000 settlement in a civil rights complaint filed by former Webster County Sheriff Deputy Amy Stern Stringer was made public Thursday. Stringer received $50,000 immediately. She will receive ongoing monthly payments of $3,570 that will continue from January 2025 through December 2031, according to documents signed earlier this year. The settlement also pays her attorneys Roxanne Conlon and Associates of Des Moines $150,000. Webster County Sheriff Lou Fleener, one of the defendants in the complaint, issued a statement after the settlement announcement was made public. I have maintained the fact that our administration team did nothing wrong since this complaint was filed a year ago. Deputy Christie and I, as well Webster County Board of Supervisors and Webster County Human Resources Director Ted Vaughn, we're looking forward to our day in court to defend our reputations and our department and county as it pertained to these accusations. Unfortunately, we will not have a chance to let the truth be heard in a court of law. It's disappointing that this type of complaint can be settled for financial gain. In addition to Fleener, the civil rights complaint listed Webster County Chief Deputy Derek Christie, Webster County Human Resources Director Ted Vaughn, Webster County Attorney Darren Driscoll, Webster County, the Webster County Board of Supervisors, and Detective Thomas Steck as defendants. In her original complaint to the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation, Stringer alleged that Detective Thomas Steck was involved in criminal activities, namely covering up an informant, providing him with fake alibis, and hearing a person in custody without cause, and beating a person in custody without cause. according to a story published in The Messenger in 2023. She alleged that after that, she reported Steck, the sheriff and chief deputy, began to target her in retaliation. Stringer's civil rights complaint asset that the discrimination she received, including retaliation, harassment, and forced to resign, was based on her sex. As a female, and because she reported discrimination to someone within the sheriff's office, Stringer said she went to Vaughn, the human resources director for the county departments, on March 7, 2023, to file an official complaint about Steck's alleged harassment of her and others, and of the retaliation she was facing from the leadership within the sheriff's office. Ted wanted to help, but he also didn't want to interfere with the DCI investigation, Stringer wrote, according to the previous Messenger report. It was shortly after that the meeting that she decided she needed to leave the sheriff's office. As a result of the retaliation I face, being scrutinized for everything I did, being singled out repeatedly, and being passed up on positions I was told I would previously get, I knew I had to resign, she wrote, according to the same previous Messenger story. Following my yearly evaluation, I knew I wouldn't be able to continue to grow in my career. I was told I was lazy and selfish, even though I had never been warned or talked to about any of these apparent issues prior to my complaint against Steck. I also know Sheriff Fleener wants to bring Steck back, and I could not work in a place where I would be in constant fear. Thus, because of the way the Webster County Sheriff's Office treated me, I was forced to quit my job. She resigned from the sheriff's office on April 9, 2023. Steck resigned from the sheriff's office on July 27, 2023. He had been placed on administrative leave on October 19, 2022. During the nearly 9 months he was on paid administrative leave, Steck collected roughly $65,000 in salary and benefits. Jisco released the statement after the settlement was made public Thursday. A settlement has been finalized, resolving disputed civil rights claims brought by former Webster County employee Amos Stringer. The settlement releases all claims Stringer may have against former Webster County employee Thomas Steck, Webster County or the Webster County's office, and other Webster County officials. Webster County entered into the settlement agreement on the advice of the county's risk pool and outside legal counsel. It was determined that it would be in the best interest of the public that these claims be amicably resolved without additional litigation. The respondents to the complaint maintain their denial of any wrongdoing in this matter. A copay of the settlement agreement is available for public inspection. A copy of the settlement agreement is available for public inspection. Stringer is now a patrol officer with Fort Dodge Police Department. Prior to her resignation from the sheriff's office, she spent 10 years working as a deputy with the department. The last four, she has worked as a detective. Stringer is a Fort Dodge native, but started her law enforcement career with the Dodge City Police Department in Dodge City, Kansas, where she served as a patrol officer, a gang officer, and a member of the Problem on Police units. The Iowa Central Community College dance team. Tritons load up at dance cheer nationals. By Dana Becker. The Iowa Central dance and cheer teams earned several top finishes while competing recently at nationals. The event took place in Daytona, Florida. A total of three Triton dance routines qualified for the NDA Nationals as they competed in hip-hop, palm, and sprint rally divisions. Iowa Central, which won the state championship in palm, placed second at Nationals, while the hip-hop routine was fourth. To take three routines to the biggest dance competition in the country is no easy feat, Iowa Central dance team coach Cassidy Vermeer said, and to go out and to compete at that level is a huge accomplishment. With a total of 90.4571, the Tritons placed only behind Blinn College for their POM title. They scored nearly a point better in finals compared to prelims. Our POM routine is jam-packed with a lot of skills, assistant coach Stephanie Sibnaller said. It is the same routine we performed at state, but we look at it and made it more difficult with a new sequence and end sequence. The fact that these dancers can execute skills at such a high level says a lot about the team. Palm was a tough division, and we are very happy with how we ended up. In hip-hop, the Tritons recorded a score of 87.9429, placing behind McClellan, Odessa, and Utah State University's Eastern. They improved upon their prelim score on the division. The Triton cheer team finished second in small co-ed, with large co-ed placing third at NCAA College National Championships. They were also third in Spirit Rally for the opening division. Large co-ed is one of the hardest divisions cheer has to offer. Iowa Central head cheer coach Amanda Murphy said, "You can only grow outside of your comfort zone, and that is why we made the change to advanced division. We've stepped up our game, and we are making Iowa Central known. It is also the first year we've had a small intermediate team and want to make an impact on that division as well." Iowa Central was just behind Dodge City for the small co-ed title, scoring 91.581. Dodge City had a total of 94.4306. In large co-ed, the Tritons placed behind Trinity Valley and Navarro. The University of Texas topped Iowa Central in Spirit Rally. Body found in Iowa farm, field positively identified, by Jim Salter, Associated Press. A body found in northwest Iowa field has been identified of that as a missing truck driver discovered not far from where he abandoned his rig, found on an isolated highway just before Thanksgiving. But details of his death remain a mystery. The Iowa Department of Public Safety said Thursday the state medical examiner's office had conducted a forensic autopsy and authorities identified the body as that of David Schultz, 53, with dental records. The department said the authorities do not suspect foul play in his death. Preliminary autopsy results showed no signs of trauma or serious injury, the agency said. Further results are pending. The department said someone in the field discovered a body Wednesday near the Schultz's semi was found parked in the middle of the road on November 25th. Schultz's wife, Sarah, told reporters on Thursday that the person discovered was wearing boots that matched her husband's, and his keys were found in the pants pocket. The discovery, she said, brought a mixture of relief and sorrow. "I am glad we know where he is now," Sarah Schultz said. "There are still a lot of questions. Things don't make sense." Schultz of Wall Lake left home late on the night of November 20th to pick up a load of pigs from a hog confinement near Eagle Grove, Iowa. He was expected to deliver the pigs the next morning to a livestock dealer in Sac City, Iowa, a small farming town about 90 miles northwest of Des Moines. When he didn't show up, no one could get him on the phone. Sarah Schultz reported him missing, and the truck was found later that afternoon less than 10 miles northeast of his destination. The pigs were still in the trailer. Schultz's wallet and phone were inside his rig. His jacket was on the roadside. A nonprofit search and rescue organization has helped with the search, said local enforcement agencies. They searched the area where the body was found immediately after Schultz went missing, including with drones. More than 200 volunteers searched an additional 100,000 acres. An unanswered question, Rowley said, was whether the body was there the entire time or if it was recently moved to the spot where it was found. Sarah Schultz described her husband as a devoted family man who stressed to his kids the importance of being respectful and working hard. "He was such a good father," Sarah Schultz said. "It's not fair." This date in history, Associated Press. Today's highlights. On April 26, 1986, an explosion and the fire at Chernobyl nuclear power plant in Ukraine caused radioactive fallout to begin spewing into the atmosphere. Dozens of people were killed in the immediate aftermath of the disaster, while the long-term death toll from radiation poisoning is believed to be in the many thousands. On this date, in 1607, English colonists went ashore at present-day Cape Henry, Virginia, on an expedition to establish the first permanent English settlement in the Western Hemisphere. In 1865, John Wilkes Booth, the assassin of President Abraham Lincoln, was surrounded by federal troops near Port Royal, Virginia, and killed. In 1913, Mary Fagan, a 13-year-old worker at the Georgia Pencil Factory, was strangled. Leo Frank, the factory superintendent, was convicted of a murder and sentenced to death. Frank's death sentence was commuted, but he was lynched by an anti-Semitic mob in 1915. In 1933, Nazi Germany's infamous secret police, the Gestapo, was created. In 1977, the legendary nightclub Studio 54 had its opening in New York City. Around the area, Eagle Grove, Sacred Heart Catholic Church, 221 Jackson Avenue, Eagle Grove, is holding a spring luncheon from 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. Sunday at the church. Sandwiches and a variety of salads, desserts, and drinks will be served. Tickets are $12 for adults and $5 for children under 10. Carryouts will be available. Gowrie United Methodist Church. Gowrie is holding a May basket sale at 8 a.m. until sold out Saturday at the church. Baskets are $3 each. Coffee and cookies will be served. Webster City. Kendall Young Library, Webster City is holding a summer library kickoff carnival from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Saturday. The Blank Park Zoo will have an activity booth from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Information on the library's summer program will be available along with opportunity to pre-register for programs. Dakota City. Support Our Veterans Ride is holding an Blackout Dart Tournament fundraiser Saturday at the VFW, Dakota City. Sign up begins at 4 p.m. with the tournament starting at 5 p.m. The tournament is a double elimination. Sign-up fee is $20. $10 to the winner's pot, $10 to the veteran's ride. VFW will cover green fees as well as donating a grand board to be raffled off. Food will be available for a free will donation. Badger. Badger Lions Club is holding a pancake breakfast from 8 a.m. to noon Sunday at the Badger Fire Station. The menu is all the pancakes you can eat with sausages, eggs, orange juice, milk, or coffee for a free will donation. Those attending are encouraged to bring used eyeglasses and hearing aids for the Lions to recycle. Net profit will support community and Lions projects. Fort Dodge, Epworth Methodist Church, 2025 11th Avenue South, is holding a luncheon and bake sale at 11:30 a.m. Sunday at the church. Loose meat sandwiches, salads, bar, and drink will be served for a free will donation. Fort Dodge, Eggs and Issues Legislative Forum at 8:30 to 10 a.m. Saturday at the Triton Cafe Boardroom on the Iowa Central College campus. The forum is free. Fort Dodge, Iowa Central Community College presents Disney's Beauty and the Beast at 7 p.m. today and Saturday at 2 p.m. and Sunday at 2 p.m. in Decker Auditorium and Center for Performing Arts on the Iowa Central Community College campus. General admission tickets are $15 for adults, $10 for students, kindergarten through 12th grade, and free for ICC students with ID. The box office opens 1 hour prior to the shows. Fort Dodge, the Women of St. Paul Lutheran Church, 400 South 13th Street, are holding a salad luncheon Saturday. Viewing of decorated dining tables begin at 11 a.m., followed by the salad buffet at 11:45 a.m. Tickets must be purchased at the church office. No tickets will be sold at the door. The luncheon proceeds will go to various charities. Fort Dodge, Unity Point Health, Trinity Regional Medical Center, 420 Kenyon Road, is hosting a health fair from 7 to 9 a.m. today in the Trinity Gifts Lobby. Supreme Court seems skeptical of Trump's claim of absolute immunity, but decision's timing is unclear. Washington, Associated Press. The Supreme Court on Thursday appeared likely to reject former President Donald Trump's claim of absolute immunity from prosecution over election interference, but several justices signaled reservations about the charges that could cause a lengthy delay, possibly beyond this November's election. A majority of the justices did not appear to embrace the claim of absolute immunity that would stop Special Counsel Jack Smith's prosecution of Trump on charges he conspired to overturn his 2020 election loss to Democrat Joe Biden. But in arguments lasting more than 2.5 hours in the court's first consideration of criminal charges against the former president, several conservative justices indicated they could limit when former presidents might be prosecuted, suggesting that the case may have to be sent down back to the lower courts before any trial could begin. Justice Samuel Alito said that whatever we decide is going to apply to all future presidents. The timing of the Supreme Court's decision could be as important as the outcome. Trump, the presumptive 2024 Republican presidential nominee, has been pushing to delay the trial until after the election, and the later the justices issue their decision, the more likely he is to succeed. If Trump regains the presidency, he could order the Justice Department to dismiss the case, or possibly, as two justices suggested, pardon himself if convicted. Bears take Williams at number one. Associated Press, Detroit. Caleb Williams, swiftly walked on stage, looked out and screamed, "Whoa, yeah, long-suffering Bears fans felt this joy." Williams is heading to the Windy City, aiming to become the franchise quarterback Chicago has sought for decades. "My goal is to get into as far as February as I can," Williams said, referring to playing in the Super Bowl for a team that hasn't hoisted a Lombardi Trophy in 40 years. The 2022 Heisman Trophy winner kicked off an historic NFL draft Thursday night that had five other teams selecting quarterbacks among 12 picks, setting a record with five in top 10 and tying a record for the most first round. Dandy debut, Chicago's Pete Crow Armstrong. Cub rookie slugs home run for first career hit. Pete Crow Armstrong hit a tie-breaking league hit, and the Chicago Cubs swept the Houston Astros with a 3-1 victory on Thursday. Nico Horner had three hits, and Mike Tauchman went 1-for-1 with three walks as Chicago won for the fourth time in five games. Hayden Wesneski, 2-0, pitched 2 1/3 perfect innings for the win in relief of Javier Assad. Houston has lost a season-high five straight and Houston has lost a season-high five straight and 8 of 9 overall. At 7-19, it is off to its worst 26-game start since 1969. First-year manager Joe Espada was rejected by plate umpire Jansen Visconti on the top of the ninth. "I just did not agree with his strike zone all day," Espada said after his first ejection as a big league skipper. Crow Armstrong was recalled from a AAA Iowa. Cody Bellinger was placed on the 10-day injured list on Wednesday with two fractured ribs. The 22-year-old outfielder, who was considered one of the team's top prospects, made his big league debut last year and went 0-for-14 while appearing in 14 games. He picked a perfect time for his first major league hit. Houston had a 1-0 lead before Dansbury Swanson scampered home on a fielder's choice grounder for Miguel Amaya in the sixth. Area athletes competed. Drake, Des Moines, Rachel Shanney and Madison Eric got things rolling here Thursday for the area Drake relays. Shanney, a sophomore from Emmitsburg, tied for 11th in the high jump, and Eric, a senior from Algona, finished tied for 15th. Panora's Jaden Sellers, the University of Iowa softball, won the event by clearing 5'7" on her second attempt. Making her second appearance at the Drake relays, Shanney easily went over 5'1" to begin. WNBA players try to make rosters. The WNBA draft is over, and superstars like number one pick Caitlin Clark are heading towards surefire pro careers. Not all 36 selections from this year's draft will have such assurances. The league has 144 coveted roster spots among 12 teams, and other options for pro careers in women's basketball, either in the United States or overseas, are very scarce. It's a sharp contrast from men's prospects who don't make NBA rosters. They have more opportunities, including more overseas opportunities, playing in the G League. The NBA also has 30 teams with 15 players allowed on regular season roster, so there are more spots available. Why don't all WNBA draft picks make team rosters? There's a simple reason why beginning by being among those 36 draft picks doesn't ensure a roster spot. Most of the spots will be taken by returning players. In brief, a U.S.-led effort to bring aid to Gaza by sea is moving forward. Jerusalem, Associated Press. The construction of a new port in Gaza and an accompanying U.S. military-built pier offshore are underway, but the complex plan to bring more desperately needed food to Palestinian civilians, is still mired in fears over security and how the humanitarian aid will be delivered. The Israeli-developed port, for example, has already been attacked by mortar fire, sending high-ranking UN officials scrambling for shelter this week, and there still is no solid decision on when the aid deliveries will actually begin. While satellite photos show major port construction along the shore near Gaza City, aid groups are making it clear that they have broad concerns about their safety and reservations about Israeli forces will handle security. Sonali Korde, an official with the United States Agency for International Development, said key agreements for security and handling the aid deliveries are still being negotiated. Those include how Israeli forces will operate in Gaza to ensure that aid workers are not harmed. "We need to see steps implemented, and the humanitarian community and IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces, continue to talk and engage and iterate and improve the system so that everyone feels safe and secure in this difficult operation. Biden celebrates computer chip factories pitching voters on American comeback. Syracuse, New York, Associated Press. President Joe Biden on Thursday sought to sell voters on the American comeback story as he highlighted long-term investments in the economy in upstate New York to celebrate Micron Technology's plans to build a campus of computer chip factories made possible in part with government support. Staring down a rematch with Republican Donald Trump, Biden was asked voters to buy into his vision of the future at a moment when voters are most worried about enduring pressures from high inflation. The initial phase of New York project would open the first plant in 2028 and the second plant in 2029, with more time expected for the next two factories to be completed. Biden was campaigning on promise of better times ahead, just as Trump, the former president, often taps into a past when U.S. manufacturing was the world standard. The Democrat is trying to convince voters to think beyond their present circumstances at the ballot box. "This is such a big deal," Biden said. "We're bringing advanced chip manufacturing back to America." He added, "It's one of the most significant science and technological investments in our history. It is far from surefire message in an era of near constant gratification. Compared to when Biden began in politics in the 1970s, people can immediately stream music and videos on their smartphones, order a pizza with finger swipe, or text a friend thousands of miles away. Trump, for his part, is telling voters that Biden's policies will hurt jobs tied to making gasoline-powered autos and ultimately send work to China. On Tuesday, he vented about how the rising value of the dollar against foreign currencies would hobble the U.S. manufacturing by making American-made goods simply too costly. It sounds good to stupid people, but it is a disaster for our manufacturers and others," Trump posted on Truth Social. "They are actually unable to compete, and we will be forced to either lose lots of business or build plants or whatever in the smart countries." The former president at a recent Pennsylvania rally lamented the loss of factory jobs that once made the United States the greatest country in the history of the world, saying that the country has since lost its confidence, willpower, and sight. The Biden administration helped jumpstart the Micron project by agreeing to provide $6.1 billion in government support that will also cover a memory chip factory in Idaho that will be operating in 2026. U.S. births fell last year, marking an end to the late pandemic rebound, experts say. New York, Associated Press. U.S. births fell last year, resuming a long national slide. A little under 3.6 million babies were born in 2023, according to provisional statistics released Thursday by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. That's about 76,000 fewer than the year before and the lowest one-year tally since 1979. U.S. births were slipping for more than a decade before COVID hit, then dropped 4% from 2019 to 2020. They ticked up for two straight years after that, an increase experts attributed in part to pregnancies that couples had put off amid the pandemic's early days. But the 2023 numbers seem to indicate that bump is over and we're back to trends we were at before, says Nicholas Mark, a University of Wisconsin researcher who studies how social policy and other factors influence health and fertility. Birth rates have long been falling for teenagers and younger women, but rising for women in their 30s and 40s, a reflection of women pursuing education and careers before trying to start families, experts say. But last year, birth rates fell for all women younger than 40 and were flat for women in their 40s. Mark called the development surprising and said there's some evidence that not just postponement is going on. Rates fell across almost all racial and ethnic groups. The numbers released Thursday are based on more than 99.9% of the birth certificates filed in 2023, but they are always provisional and the final birth count can change as they are finalized. For example, the provisional 2022 birth count appeared to show a dip, but ended up being higher than 2021's tally when the analysis was completed. There could be an adjustment to the 2023 data, but it won't be enough to erase the sizable decline seen in the provisional numbers and the CDC's Brady Hamilton, the new report's first author. Experts have wondered how births might be affected by June 2022, U.S. Supreme Court decision that allowed states to ban or restrict abortion. Experts estimate that nearly half of the pregnancies are unattended, so limits to abortion access could affect the number of births. The new report indicates that the decision didn't lead to a national increase in births, but the researchers didn't analyze birth trends in individual states or dissect data among different demographic groups. Tennessee lawmakers okay bill criminalizing adults who minors receive gender-affirming care. Nashville, Tennessee, Associated Press. Tennessee's GOP-controlled state house on Thursday gave their final approval to legislation criminalizing adults who help minors receive gender-affirming care without parental consent, clearing the way for the first in the nation proposal to be sent to Governor Bill Lee's desk for his signature. The bill mirrors almost the same language from a so-called anti-abortion trafficking proposal Tennessee Republican lawyers approved just the day prior. In that version, supporters are hoping to stop adults from young people obtaining abortions without permission from their parents or guardians. Lee, a Republican, hasn't publicly commented on either bill, but supporters are confident that the governor will sign them into law. Lee eagerly approved both the state's sweeping abortion ban and the state's ban on gender-affirming care for children. He has also never issued a veto during his time as governor. While the Republicans' supermajority touted the proposed statutes necessary to protect parental rights, critics warned about the possible broad application. Violations could range from talking to an adolescent about a website or where to find care to helping the young person travel to another state with looser restrictions on gender-affirming care services. According to the Human Rights Campaign, Tennessee has enacted more anti-LGBTQ plus laws more than any other state since 2015, identifying more than 20 bills that advanced out of the legislature over the past few years. Obituaries. Doris Culver, Summers. Doris May Culver, 88, of Summers, Iowa, passed away on Wednesday, April 24, 2024, at her home. Visitation will be from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. on Sunday, April 28, 2024, at the Gunderson Funeral Home and Cremation Services in Fort Dodge. She is survived by her husband, Lucky Culver, three sons, Dave Culver, Dan and Jane Culver, and Daryl Jean Culver, six grandchildren and ten great-grandchildren. Please visit Gunderson Funeral Home to read a complete obituary and to leave online condolences. Paulette Fijetlin, Goldfield. Paulette Fijetlin, 91, of Goldfield, passed away Saturday, April 20th, 2024, at the Van Deese Medical Center in Webster City, Iowa. Funeral services will be held Saturday, April 27th, 2024, at 1 p.m. at Ewing Funeral Home, 1801 Central Avenue East in Clarion. Burial will be at the Glenwood Cemetery in Goldfield. Visitation will be held 1 hour prior to services at the funeral home on Saturday. Phyllis Vick, Humboldt. Funeral services are at 10:30 a.m. Monday, April 29th at Our Savior's Lutheran Church in Humboldt. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to the service. Carrie Elkin, Webster City, 76, passed away April 25th, 2024. Visitation will be held Tuesday, April 30th from 5 to 7 p.m. at Asbury United Methodist Church. In brief, Ariel Henry resigns as Prime Minister of Haiti, paving the way for a new government to take power. Port-au-Prince, Haiti, Associated Press. Haiti opened a new political chapter Thursday with the installation of a transitional council tasked to pick a new prime minister and prepare for eventual presidential elections in hopes of quelling spiraling gang violence that has killed thousands in the Caribbean country. Ariel Henry, the prime minister who had been locked out of the country for the past couple of months due to the violence, cleared the way for the transition by presenting his resignation in a letter signed in Los Angeles. The document was released Thursday in Haiti on the same day as the new transitional council was sworn in to choose a new prime minister and cabinet. Henry's outgoing cabinet chose economy and finance minister Michael Bosford, an interim prime minister in the meantime. It was not immediately clear when the transitional council would name its own choice for interim prime minister. Addressing a crowd and sweaty room in the prime minister's office, Bosford said that Haiti's crisis has gone on too long and the country now has found itself at a crossroads. The members of the transitional council stood behind him and before him, the country's top police and military officials, as well as ambassadors and well-known politicians. After long months of debate, a solution has been found, Bosford said. Today is an important day in the life of our dear republic. This brings us to the end of today's reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette, and Fort Dodge Messenger. My name is Stuart Bromes. Thanks for sharing your time with IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind.